Hello, everyone. My name is Kelly Munn with the League of Education Voters. Many of you know us as LEV. Welcome to our online webinar series, Lunchtime Levinars. Today is the third webinar in our series called College and Career Ready, A New High School Diploma for Washington. Today, we will hear from Noreen Light, the Associate Director of Academic Affairs and Policy, and Anna Beatty, Program Associate for Gear Up for the Washington State Student Achievement Council. Today's webinar will focus on what it really takes to be prepared for a technical, two-year, or four-year school in Washington. But before we begin with today's webinar, I want to update you on the rules for the new graduation requirements. The first two webinars in this series explained our new graduation requirements. We described the new law in the first webinar, and in the second webinar, we described the rules implementation and the flexibility in the writing of the rules. And in particular, we discussed our concerns about the potential for the rules to be weakened to the point that some kids would not have access to rigor, in particular, kids of color, poverty, ELL, homeless, and foster kids. LEV and others, including some of you on the webinar today, sent emails, testified, or signed on to letters asking for the strongest rules possible that ensured all children had access to the 17 core credits, like English, math, and science, and that parents and guardians were included in this process. Well, good news, really good news. Because of you, because we had so many people speak up in support of what the State Board had put forward, we were able to overcome the opposition, and the State Board voted to support their strong original rules. The advocacy on this issue was enormous. You can read about the story of the advocacy at our website, educationvoters.org. And as a follow-up, we have an important action for you to take. The State Board took a difficult vote. The opposition is going to be loud and strong against the State Board's decision. Please take 2 minutes to thank the Board for their work. Again, you can find this at bit.ly, thank you, SBE, which is displayed in the chat feature on the left of your screen. We have this all automatic for you, so it'll go directly to the State Board, and it'll be easy for you to do. But please take a moment and write them a note. They took a bold vote, and they stuck to what they believed in, and they're going to take heat, but we can help support them. So just a few reminders before we give the floor to our presenters. You'll notice we have a chat function on the left-hand side of the webinar. This is a space for you to post questions to the presenter. You can pose questions anytime during the presentation. I'm the facilitator, and I will be collecting those questions, and then we'll ask them at the end of the presentation. Please remember to be respectful, as all of this information is public, and we will be archived for later access to our website. We have two presenters today. We have Noreen Light, Associate Director of Academic Affairs and Policy, and Anna Beatty, Program Associate for Gear Up from the Washington State Student Achievement Council. Noreen Light, Noreen's primary policy areas include dual credit, college readiness, and minimum college admission standards. Noreen holds a master's degree in education and has 10 years of experience as a technical college faculty member and 6 years of experience in higher education policy. Noreen is outdoors whenever possible, biking, sailing, and enjoying the beautiful Pacific Northwest. Anna, Program Associate for Outreach with the Washington State Achievement Council. Anna runs the 12th Year Campaign, which combines two national campaigns, the American College Application Campaign and then with the College Goal Washington, into one joint effort. Anna holds a master's degree in sociology and a master's degree in education, with 2 years of experience in college access and support. Anna is an avid runner, hiker, and rock climber, and loves exploring the Olympic Mountains. I'd like to welcome Noreen Light and Anna Beatty. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Anna and I are just, this is Noreen speaking, and Anna and I are just so honored to be with you today and very pleased to be able to share information that we believe will help you be successful, not only getting into the right college for you, but also being successful while you're in college and completing your degree program. And while we realize that there may be educators and administrators and others on the web with us today, we're going to direct our information towards students and families, knowing that those of you who are also working in education will be advising students and families. So that's the way we're going to direct most of our information. Mm-hmm. Anything to add, Anna?
I don't think I have anything to add. Okay. So with that, we'll get started. Okay, so we want to start a little bit about talking about the admissions process and some of the differences and similarities between two-year and four-year programs. So first off, the admissions process is really going to vary depending on the type of college you want to go to. Typically, all colleges will require some personal information like your name, your address, things like that, and a high school transcript from the applicant. More selective four-year institutions will usually require letters of recommendation, SAT or ACT test scores, an essay or personal statement, and a resume of activities. Some four-year colleges have a more open admissions policy, and they admit students that meet minimum GPA and/or test score requirements. So, for example, at Eastern Washington University, if you meet, I think it's a 3.5 GPA, you're actually automatically admitted, and you don't need to turn in an essay or a personal statement or anything like that. So in those cases, that personal statement and letters of recommendation are not required.
And the two-year institutions have an open-door policy. So when you think about the 34 community and technical colleges in the state, having a high school diploma or GED will get you in the door, but you will need to take placement assessments. And the community technical colleges also have a wide range of placement policies. Some of them use Compass or AccuPlace or exams, for example. Most will also look at your previous coursework when they're placing you into pre-college, college entry level, or advanced coursework. So there are multiple ways of demonstrating what you're ready to do. Now, some of those programs also have some specific requirements of academic coursework or other career-specific requirements. So I've shown a few of those on the screen just as an example. Math for engineering, it may be a higher level of math than is needed for some other programs. Not only do you need math and computer skills in auto tech, but you also need a clean driving record if you're going to be able to be insurable and be able to work for a dealership. Criminal background check, perhaps for a nursing program or other programs where you're going to work in a clinical setting or with children or vulnerable adults. So you really need to talk to the advisors at the institution you plan to attend and find out what the requirements are for the program that's right for you.
Okay, so the minimum college admission standards for four-year institutions include the following. Your CAERS, which are college academic distribution requirements. Noreen's going to talk about the specifics of that on the next slide. You need a 2.0 minimum grade point average and official SAT or ACT test scores that are sent directly to the college or university. I should note that there are fee waivers for these tests that are available, and so you need to talk with your high school counselor about obtaining one of those. However, selective institutions are really going to be looking for students who go beyond that minimum and will also be looking for students who challenge themselves. I've worked with students in the past to debate whether or not they should take advanced placement or honors courses because they're worried about how that will affect their GPA. However, when comparing students, a student with A's and B's in more challenging courses actually looks more attractive to a selective college than a student who earns straight A's but really never took any challenging courses. So the quality of your coursework really does matter if you're looking at going to a more selective four-year institution. Another big myth out there is that of senior spring. So senior year coursework matters. I know a lot of seniors think that they get to that senior year and they'll have to work hard first semester, but maybe second semester they can take it easy. Well, typically, selective four-year institutions will ask for a mid-year transcript and a final transcript. And if admissions officers see a student slacking off, so for example, taking significantly fewer academic courses or earning C's and D's instead of the A's and B's that that student had earned all throughout high school, they can actually revoke a student's offer of admission.
So just keep in mind that these are minimum standards, and meeting those minimums does not guarantee you admission to any institution. You're really better prepared for college-level coursework by taking the highest-level coursework available to you while you're still in high school. So let's take a look at those CATERs that Anna mentioned. And CATER stands for College Academic Distribution Requirements. What a mouthful. That's why we call it CATERs instead of that whole long line. But here's an easy way to think about it in this 4321 slide. You need to have these minimum credits, and there's more detailed information available for you, and I'll give you that website in a moment. But definitely in English, 4 credits, math, 3 credits, and that must include a senior year math-based quantitative course. Now, you may actually meet that requirement by taking a higher level of math, something above Algebra 2, in an earlier year, but you really need to get through a math course in your senior year all the way through. There's just some, we have information that shows us just how important it is to continue math all the way through high school and how much more successful you will be then when you enter your college level math. It will also help you with those entrance placement assessments, such as your compass test or AccuPlace, or if you've recently taken math. So think about the difference in taking a math assessment in September when you've taken math through June, the previous June, versus having been away from math for a year or two. Social sciences, 3 credits are there for history or other social science, 2 credits of science, laboratory science, world languages, and also the arts.
And I would really stress that 4 years of math is best. So even though the minimum requirement for the CATERs is 3, I would really take 4 just because highly selective colleges are going to be looking for that. They'll also be looking for you to have 3 years of science and 3 to 4 years of social science. So one of the things that I always tell students is choose your electives wisely. Make sure that you're taking academic courses for your electives, maybe instead of doing things like being a teaching assistant, or think about taking something like journalism or photography for an art that would have kind of a practical application or could to a career, you know, again, rather than doing something where you're really not getting anything academic out of it.
And there are other options as well open to you in high school. So don't forget about dual credit programs. Those have the highest rigor. They're an awesome opportunity. That could be advanced placement, IB, Running Start, college in the high school. Can also be career and technical programs. So think about those career and technical education programs that include an equivalency to these CATERs. So thinking about all those things, you're thinking about what you want to do next in life, and as I like to think about it, what do you want to do with your one precious life? You have so many options available to you, and your pathways might include a technical college, a two-year college, a four-year university. It might be a combination of those. We have a direct transfer agreement between our two-year institutions and our four-year institutions, those public institutions, so that's a great way to go. Earn your associate's degree and transfer to a four-year. Or you might decide to choose a path of an apprenticeship, military service, or other options. The coursework and habits that help you prepare for college help you prepare for all of those other options. You need strong leadership skills, communication, et cetera, in every avenue that you might pursue. And apprenticeship programs can be a great opportunity, and they can also be very selective. So it really helps you to prepare well now and keep all of those doors open. Employers are also looking for outstanding employees who enjoy learning, are reliable, they want you on time every day, and they're looking for people who communicate and work well within teams. These are skills that you can learn, and they can become habits through practice. So start practicing now.
So to summarize the steps that you need to take to get into college, the first step is really to apply to college. Most four-year application deadlines fall during winter, so from about mid-December through early March, if you're applying early decision or early admission, that can be even earlier, so that could be in November. Many two-year colleges are on what's called rolling admissions, where students can apply the previous quarter for enrollment in the following quarter. Some do have deadlines, though, so just make sure that you check that college's admissions website to make sure that you're meeting all the deadlines you need to. The second step is to file the FAFSA. FAFSA stands for Free Application for Federal Student Aid. You access it at FAFSA.gov. A general rule of thumb is that one should complete an initial submission of the FAFSA using estimated income information from the previous year by February 1st, the senior year. So all colleges and universities in our state will set a priority deadline for the FAFSA, and if you file initially by February 1st, you'll be sure to meet that. Most people will use their prior year tax information to do this. You do have to update the FAFSA with actual tax information 2 to 3 weeks after filing your taxes. And I always tell families, don't wait until April 15th to file, because colleges are putting together their application packages, including financial aid offers, as early as April. So make sure you file taxes early. This might seem like an extra step, but really, if you complete that initial submission before February 1st, it ensures your child's place in line for financial aid, and more sources of need-based aid are available the earlier one files. If you need assistance with filing the FAFSA, I would check out College Goal Washington events. You can access a list of those. They will be, I believe, at ReadySetGrad.com/collegegoal. And there are annual events. They're all over Washington State. And financial aid officers will come in, as well as trained volunteers, and really help you file that FAFSA. So if it seems daunting, I would definitely go check that out. The third step is to take a placement test. So typically, the last SAT or ACT test date that can be considered by a four-year college for admissions is the fall test date, which is in October or November. Two-year colleges will have students take a placement test, such as the Compass or AccuPlacer, in fields like math and English language arts prior to enrollment, and it determines what level of math and English language arts the student will be placed in once he or she starts at the college. And the last thing to do is really to stay on track, make sure you're meeting all graduation requirements, and really keep those senior year grades up.
So one other thing I'd like to say, and that is, you know, looking back at all those requirements, you may be thinking, well, gosh, I didn't make it through all of those courses. I don't have all of those credits. Or maybe you've been away from school for a while. You can still go to college. You may need some pre-college level coursework to prepare yourself academically for college level work, but you can still go to college. Talk to the advising staff at the colleges you're thinking about and find out what you can do to get started now. So what else is on your mind? What other questions do you have for us? I know some were listed in the chat window, and I believe our moderator is going to help us with that.
Thank you, Noreen and Anna. Your presentation laid out the groundwork for what it takes to get into a technical two-year or four-year school in Washington State. Now is the time. We're going to spend about 8 minutes taking questions. I have a couple of questions that people have already sent me. Remember that you can type a question in the chat feature on the left of your screen. Let's start with, what are the most common misconceptions that students and parents have about what it takes to get into college?
Could you repeat that? You actually got a little bit muffled there, and we didn't hear the whole question.
Okay. What are the most common misconceptions that students and parents have about what it takes to get into college?
Do you want to start?
I think one of the most common misconceptions is one that I just addressed, actually, and that is that they think they can't go to college because they didn't take certain classes in high school. And we just want to reassure people that everyone can go to college. Everyone starts from where they are, and some people take a little longer in some course areas than others to get to graduation, but everyone can go to college.
I would say one that I encounter a lot is the idea of senior spring. So I'm hoping that that message is getting out there, that there is no such thing as senior spring. You want to be working hard all 4 years. Another would be, I seem to find a lot of students who really have their heart set on one university, like the University of Washington, for example, and kind of get derailed if they don't get in. So I think a good idea would be to research other colleges and universities that are like your dream school and identify about 3 to 5 that you want to apply to. And you want to make a list. We call it reach, target, and safety. So reach schools would be ones that they might be an academic reach, they might be a financial reach for you. A target school would be one where you feel pretty confident you're going to get in and you know you'd be happy there. And safety, it's not really your backup school. It's more one, again, you'd be happy there, but maybe it doesn't have all the programs that you want. Maybe it doesn't have the sites that you want or the student life that you want. So definitely be preparing for more than your dream school.
I have a question from Joyce Yee, and she's asking if you can explain how the Dream Hope Act bill affects undocumented high school students who want to go to college.
Sure. So the Real Hope Act, one of the results of that is that certain undocumented high school students can now access sources of state financial aid, like the state NEED grant. It's not going to cover everything for a student. I believe at the most expensive four-year school, it covers about $10,000 of that. But remember, you know, you have not just tuition, but you have to pay for your room and board and your living expenses and all of the other things in your cost of attendance. So I think one of the things that it does give undocumented students a source of financial aid to go to college that they are eligible for, but they are still going to have to apply for scholarships to make up the difference. The best place to look for scholarships would be on thewashboard.org. And there's also several lists out there that have been put together by different organizations, such as the Latino Education Advocacy Project. It's a list of scholarships that are specifically for undocumented students. I have some of those lists, so if you want to email me, my email address is listed up there. I'm happy to send you that handbook of scholarships that are available to students who may not have a Social Security number.
You had mentioned that that you could get the fee waiver and that they should go to their counselor to find out about how to get it. In some school districts and some schools, the students can have very minimal access to a counselor. Is there a way for them to apply for the fee waiver themselves?
I'm not sure. You know, that's a very good question. I'm not sure of the answer of how they would directly apply for a fee waiver. I would advise them to go to an administrator there at their high school if there isn't an advisor available, and I'm certain that they would be able to help them.
I would also take a look at the College Board website. I believe there's information about fee waivers for the SAT listed on the College Board website. The other thing, too, would be that if you're looking for a fee waiver for college applications, if you are awarded one for the SAT, I believe you get up to 4 for different colleges and universities. But most colleges and universities have their own policy where, you know, you can have a counselor write a letter for you or a trusted adult write a letter on your behalf explaining your financial situation and asking for a fee waiver. So there's multiple avenues to do it. You just may have to be a bit of an advocate for yourself and ask the college directly.
And here's a question from Raymond Fenton. While remaining specific to the technical school admission, how helpful is a portfolio of work as supplement to essays and transcript? Would it be a buffer for classes I did poorly in?
Yes, I think that's an excellent example of being able to use multiple measures of assessing what it is that you know and you can do. And that's why quite a few of the colleges are using more of a transcript-based placement. They're looking more holistically at the student and looking at not only placement assessment scores, but previous coursework. And I would say in this example, the portfolio of experiences would be very helpful.
And this is going to be my last question. Should everyone apply for the FAFSA, even if I'm pretty sure I won't get any need-based aid?
Yes, and in fact, I would say this is a question I love getting because everybody should apply for the FAFSA, even if you think you're not. One of the common things I hear is, I'm not going to get anything from the FAFSA. My family makes too much money. Well, you actually don't really know that until you apply. Because different colleges have very different costs of attendance, you know, say that you file the FAFSA and it says that your expected family contribution is around $10,000. Well, $10,000 at the University of Washington will qualify you for, you know, less financial aid because you're not going to need as much as it would at, say, a college like Whitman or Whitworth that's more expensive. The other thing, too, is that often the aid that you're offered changes from year to year. So as when I was a college student, I found myself in a situation where my first year, the FAFSA qualified me for an unsubsidized Stafford loan. But my second year, because my parents' income didn't go up and the cost of college did, I ended up qualifying for subsidized loans where the government paid my interest while I was going to school. So it's definitely worth it to apply. You definitely have the option to reject any of the aid that you're offered. So if you're offered a student loan and you don't want to take it and you have other means, you can go do that as well. The FAFSA is also the only way to apply for state and federal work study, and that's a great source of financial aid, especially if you would like to work during college. And it can be the first step in applying for many scholarships as well. So I think it's definitely worth it to apply, even if you don't know if you're going to get that need-based aid.
Well, thank you, Noreen and Anna. This has been an excellent presentation. I have a few closing remarks, and then we will be done for the day. Again, for those of you out there, if you'd like to learn more about the Washington Student Achievement Council, you can find them at wsac.wa.gov. Our next webinar is 2 weeks from today. It'll be July 30th, 12:30 to 1. We will have our fourth and last in this series of webinars. We will be having guest presenter Mike Floden, Dean for Mathematics, Science, and Engineering at Tacoma Community College. And he's talking about reducing remediation for high school graduates. Tacoma Community College is successfully accelerating students so that they're avoiding extensive remedial courses and are moving them into college credit-bearing classes quickly. I'm personally really looking forward to hearing how the Tacoma Community College is doing this, because this is one of the bigger barriers for students, is having to take so many remedial classes. If you missed a part of today's presentation or would like to download the slides, they are available on our website at educationvoters.org. In the meantime, please take a moment to thank the State Board for their work approving the strongest rules possible for our new high school diploma, which is at bit.ly, thank you, SBE, and again, up on our chat site. We hope to see you again in 2 weeks. Thank you for attending.
Thank you so much for spending this time with us. We've enjoyed being a part of the webinar series, and if you have further questions for either Anna or for me, please contact us or go to ReadySetGrad.org for further information. Thank you.
Thank you.